Blog Talk Radio.
The intro music hasn't worked ever, yeah, like where it starts up on time, but like it's playing now.
I hate your intro song every time.
There it goes. Wow.
I don't know what it is about, you know, your song that was kind of screwed up. But anyways, everyone listening to Battle Red Radio, my name is Matt Weston, and tonight I'm joined by BFD. How are you doing tonight?
Woo!
Yeah. Yeah, I just got done with some of the Cubs win. That was kind of fun. But, you know, BFD, we'll talk about football. And did you know that playing a different quarterback every week probably isn't the best way to run a football team?
No, you lie, you lying liar.
I don't know. But with six, Bill O'Brien seems to think differently. With 6:13 left in the second quarter, Brian Hoyer came for Ryan Mallett, who looked like he took a shot to the head. I know they called a rough and passer penalty on the hit. He came on the sidelines being looked at. And then during the span, Brian Hoyer threw a 24-yard pass to DeAndre Hopkins on 3rd and 10. And I think that was, you know, all Bill O'Brien needed to see. And yeah, Ryan Mallett did not come out of the game after that. So, BFD, were you excited to see Brian Hoyer come in, actually, you know, play a game, come in for Ryan Mallett like that?
No, I just think it's, you know, I don't know what you call that type of management style with your quarterbacks when, you know, I can understand pulling Hoyer. I mean, here's ultimately the difference. This is going back to the Schaub and Keenum situation. To me, it's very, very similar. You know what you've got, a known commodity with Matt Schaub without wheels. If you know exactly what you got, well, you have a big enough sample size to know exactly what you got with Brian Hoyer. What you don't know what you've got is what you've got with Case Keenum, or now Ryan Mallett. Give them the keys to the kingdom. You know what? If they fail, they fail, but at least you've given them a shot. To take Mallett out, Mallett came back, or, you know, took himself out of the game, and does it go back to that whole machismo thing on Hard Knocks when Courtney Brown took himself out and Bob got so pissed about it? Is that the kind of maturity you're going to have when your quarterback takes a shot like that? So I don't know what this management style is called, but the only term I can think that comes to mind is clusterfuckatopia, because this is just a tremendous clusterfuck with a lack of a plan, lack of foresight, and really the lack of a strategy.
Yeah, I'm going to call it the 13-year-old girl dating strategy, where, you know, every week there's a different boy she's going out with. You know, it always lasts 1 week, and you know, bounces around back and forth. She's already switching somebody she's going out with. And, I mean, it's weird. The whole thing is just, you're dumb. And it's kind of funny how, like, that 124-yard pass was all Bill O'Brien needed. Like, okay, we're not putting Mal back in. We're sticking with this. And I really do like your analogy comparing this to 2013, where we knew what we had with Schaub at that point. He was a quarterback who was really good. His arm just completely died for whatever reason, and we won't know. Maybe it was his age, if it was injury, we don't know. But with Keenum, at least there's something that you don't know exactly, so let's get 8 games out of him, see what's there, so that way you can make a better decision moving forward. And it's the same thing now, too. Like with Hoyer, you know, you're 1-4. If this team wins or not, it doesn't really seem like it matters that much, so at least see what you can do with some type of continuity quarterback with Mallett. Let him play every week. Tell him he's going to play, you know, X amount of time. Just stick with him, see what you have, so that at least next year, you know what decision you have going forward to make, right? Which it seems kind of obvious to begin with, but at least you can see the chance that he can get any better, you know? And this whole thing has just been just so silly.
Yeah, and the one thing that really bothers me is people are looking at Hoyer's stats and they're going, well, look at his numbers. They're so much better than Mallett. But we need context here, people, which is, Hoyer got a ton of trash time coming into a game that was 42-0 when the Falcons had literally sat almost their entire defensive first string defensive unit down for the night. I mean, he was playing. It was like, you know, handing the keys to the kingdom over to the guy who rips apart the game four in the preseason. You just don't do that. Mm-hmm. You have to have that context in there. But that's what Bob really seems to be doing. And it's like all of a sudden, oh, great, he can be awesome against backups. Let's put him in against a team probably about the 31st best defense in the league, and he did okay. He did okay against the 31st best defense in the league, you know, until the fourth quarter. So, you know, we need some context, and I don't see it with Bob. And once again, I haven't been saying it out loud, but all the Bob worshiping has bothered me, all this blind loyalty and faith that Bob knows what he's doing. And I'm at the point where I don't see a plan, I don't see a strategy, I don't see long-term success for the Texans.
So what issues do you have then with how Bill O'Brien has managed this team?
I think that the first thing that jumps out at me is that we have been so badly out-coached. The Chiefs ripped us apart. Granted, a lot of that had to do with the shitty play of Brian Hoyer, right? Brian Hoyer is the one who had two turnovers in our own end zone. So are we going to put in Brian Hoyer for Ryan Mallett in game five? So see the types of lines we're crossing here. The defense has looked awful. I've had a real big problem especially with the safeties heading into the season. But we look terrible defensively. We look really bad defensively. Even J.J. Watt looks lost out there. PFF, grain of salt, et cetera, et cetera. Gave him J.J. Watt a negative game against the Colts. And it's not surprising. He did not look good. He did not look like J.J. Watt. Excuse me. So, you know, these are the sorts of things that I'm seeing. And last year, Bob was calling the offensive game plan. It wasn't abhorrent. Now that Godsey is doing it, I don't see a plan. The defense looks awful. You still haven't addressed the most important position on the team, which is quarterback, in any meaningful way. So What is the plan? What's the line from Hunt for Red October? The Ruskies don't take a dump without a plan. And we don't have a plan, not even for taking a dump.
We just got a question from Dama Dan, and he asked, you know, you talked about Bill O'Brien just now. Would you put most of the blame on him, or would you put it on the assistant coaches or the players?
There's a lot to be said about the hiring of Bill O'Brien as the head coach. And once again, if you're going to go out, you're going to hire a known commodity like Ken Whisenhunt, who is just kind of known to be a pretty poor coach. Yes, he had a couple flashes. That's one thing. So you took a chance on Bob. That's fine. I still don't have a problem with that hiring, even though I've been reading some stuff from 2013 saying, oh, wait a minute, Bob's not your guy. Anyway, that aside. You've got a rookie head coach, basically, second year. But what you still don't see is the personnel. If you look up and down the roster, and I'm literally talking up and down the roster with the possible of exception of DeAndre Hopkins, you don't have a single playmaker on this entire roster. Not one. Brian Cushing's not the same. J.J. Watt, probably still a defensive guy. But offensively, you're trotting out there the likes of Nate Washington, Cecil Shorts, both washed-up veterans who really don't bring a lot of skills to the table. You're drafting
guys. Don't talk about Mumfrey. Cecil Shorts like that.
Oh, God, he's mediocre. Keith Mumfrey is another guy with middling long speed, no quicks. You know, these aren't the type of guys who are going to blow your offense open. We don't have a single lid lifter on the roster. Keyshawn Martin was a failure, DeVere. Posey was a failure. Mumfrey looks like a failure. Nate Washington and Cecil Shorts, really? So where is the talent? Where are the big play guys? Arian Foster's not that guy anymore. And we're drafting plodding running back like Alfred Blue, a different running style than Arian Foster. So you're not even lining your skills up well with the guys you're taking in the draft. And the whole thing about we can't even trot out a Deion Lewis out on the field. That's the quality of player we're talking about. We don't even have Deion Lewis on a roster.
Mm-hmm. And
anyway, I'm done with my old rant.
Yeah, I'll talk about Bill O'Brien now. I think, you know, after Thursday night, that was kind of the biggest thing I wanted to talk about. Because a lot of, like, the more smaller details of the game, they've kind of already been washed over. You know, the game happened 5 nights ago. So I think it became more important to talk more, you know, big picture on Bill O'Brien and kind of like this team right now, because they are 1-4. And they're 31st in DVOA. They're 26th in defense, 27th in offense, 32nd in special teams. And the only team they're better than are the San Francisco 49ers, according to DVOA. But my thing with Bill O'Brien coming in, that got everybody excited, and me too, is that he was the type of coach who didn't necessarily run a system. He was a guy who was going to be fluid. He was going to not play guys who, you know, weren't playing well. He was going to be able to move on quickly and that sort of thing. And, you know, kind of like the, I guess the analogy, you know, is if you have a girlfriend, you'll break up. You usually kind of date somebody who's completely different, try something completely, you know, else. Because the last thing didn't work out for whatever reasons. And it's kind of like he was a, you know, anti-Kubiak in a lot of ways. And so but the thing is with him this year, I haven't seen, like, really any of this, like, innovation at all on the offensive side of the ball. For, you know, first off, it's the outside zone again with, you know, more power plays that don't work very well. The passing concepts, you know, it's not anything really interesting or new, and you can't really tell because they don't have a quarterback. And the quarterback situation is his, you know, completely to begin with as well. But, like, we don't see these adjustments in-game you heard so much about. They don't do anything new on offense. And it seems like the entire team is built around, can they get a lead early, can they run the ball, and can the defense stop the other side of the ball? And, you know, you make the joke all the time that this is a, you know, offense from 1998, and it is. And the team is set up to win games like it's 1998. And there's just not that innovation there. There's not those, you know, changes that we've heard so much about. And the other thing, too, drives me crazy is this idea that he's aggressive. You know, he's a hard ass. He doesn't go for it on fourth down. He punts. He kicks field goals down 28-0. All of his talk, you know, does not match the decisions he makes on the field. And, you know, it's just weird to me. And so I thought after last year, you know, they were going to become a better team by default. People thought 2 wins equals rebuilding the NFL, and it doesn't. It does not at all. It's a short sample size. It's a quick season. 2 wins is not necessarily rebuilding. 2 wins 3 years in a row is completely different. And so I thought they were going to get better. To, you know, 9 wins is more than I thought. I thought there was something to him with how he was able to get as much as he did out of Ryan Fitzpatrick. You know, this year it's all kind of like coming off the, you know, rails really quickly. And so I think there's serious doubt, like, on his ability as a head coach. You know, I don't, you know, his idea of this guy's a game changer, like a savant, a guy who's just a genius. And it hasn't happened this year, and this team's really bad. And I think it kind of, you know, starts with him.
Yeah, and it's both. Really, you've got a coach who doesn't have a plan, who doesn't really have a strategy. Not one that I can tell. Okay, maybe he does. Maybe he's got something folded up under his pillow at night. But who doesn't seem to have a plan, and he's not being given the personnel to carry out any sort of plan with, especially offensively. You know, if you're going to go – I realize it's only been 2 years, but even our 2014 and 2015 drafts are not promising. And it hurts to say that when you just keep drafting middling talent like a Keith Mumphrey, that you think you're going to improve. The only, you know, CJF turned out to be crap. I don't know. I've almost given up on him.
You can't block at all. You can't block.
Yeah, it's just surprising considering the system he came out of college. XSF, what are we going to do with Helm? So there's a lot of question marks. And you're talking about you should have a lot more productivity from your draft than what we've gotten from the last 2 years.
And also, like, I don't know how much of it he puts into it, you know, as far as the draft decision. Like, you know, they hit in the first round, you know, again, Kevin Johnson's a stud. He's going to be, you know, incredible as, you know, his career progresses. DeAndre Hopkins is the top 5 wide receiver in this league. But, you know, you kind of see, especially on the defensive side, just start watching the defensive side of the ball for an article I'm working on. And the biggest thing I've learned from it is just how important everybody is on the defensive side of the ball. You know, I know coming in this year, you talked about how bad the safeties were. I didn't think that was that big of a deal because of how good the front 7 was, how good the corners were, and they could get away with it. But you can't. Like, you need all 11 guys on the same page. And there's big, you know, every time there's a hole on the defensive side ball, any position can be exploited, you know, pretty easily. And as a result, you know, like for a good example I have is that you think one of the linebackers can't cover. So their dime packages, they have Eddie Pleasant in the box. Now, when you have Eddie Pleasant in the box, he's there primarily to cover a running back or a tight end because McKinney can't, Tuggle can't, they're not merciless, won't, Akeem Dent can't, you know. So he's in there playing the box, and they're just getting torched on runs out of, you know, the shotgun formation because Eddie Pleasant's not a good run defender, surprise. He can't blitz as well, so you're wasting a guy blitzing. And he's also not that good in coverage. And so just because you don't have a linebacker who can cover it all, your entire defense is susceptible to being run on in shotgun formations, and then you're giving up 7 yards, 8 yards of those Devontae Freeman runs against Atlanta. Those came in, you know, shotgun formation. And so I guess, you know, like these later round draft picks, they don't seem like that big of an issue. And then you start seeing that one hole in the defensive side of the ball where, hey, if we hit on anybody in the third round, that's not a problem maybe. And it just hasn't happened for the last, you know, 3 years.
Yeah, and is Eddie Pleasant the worst player in the NFL today? I mean, from the plays he gives up and the penalties he makes, is he the single worst player in the NFL today? I think it's a legit question.
Yeah, it is. Especially for how much he's used, you know.
Well, yeah. I mean, if a guy that's that bad is seeing that many snaps, you're doing it wrong.
Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think there's any other team in the NFL Eddie Pleasant will play 35 snaps on other than the Houston Texans.
Mm-mm. Well, maybe Indianapolis. That's really the only other one that's got a defensive core that's that poor.
Yeah.
But when you look at the success that teams have in the NFL, the two that stick out to me are the Packers and the Seahawks, where they hit plenty of picks, they develop a lot of in-house talent, they are not afraid to go up to the UDFAs and get more guys. But the bottom line is they are developing within. They're not
mm-hmm.
going out and signing big free agents. They are developing core players within. And that's one thing that we're not doing it right now. And you know what? The other thing they've got NFL-quality quarterbacks.
I completely agree with that. I think that the one thing to add to that is you want teams to know who they are, you know, where their strengths are, where they're going to, you know, scheme towards. And the best team, you know, teams that make the playoffs are usually the teams that know exactly what they're good at and they're going to play off of that. And they're going to use their draft capital and resources to build on this part of the team. And with Houston, it really doesn't seem like that. It seems like they have one, like, really good player at each level of the ball, but there's no unit that really stands out, you know? Like you would say, maybe the defensive line with, you know, Watt, Wilfork, and Wilfork's terrible, by the way. Watt, Wilfork, you know, Crick, and then Clowney coming down here and there. But it isn't, you know? It's a lot of Watt, and then the next level, we're seeing more Clowney. In the secondary, it's, you know, Jackson's been bad this year. Joseph hasn't been very good. It's mostly Kevin Johnson. Offense, it's Dwayne Brown, you know, Derek Newton, Brooks, and they're all pretty good at the moment. And then you have Foster and Hopkins, and it's just all these stars and all these different units, but there's no, like, you know, singles team strength at all. And you look at teams, you know, like St. Louis, they have a great defensive line. The Lions built a team on a defensive line. The Cowboys built their team on their offensive line. Then Seattle built their team on their secondary, you know, and they scheme to these strengths. Houston doesn't do that at all. They just have really good players at certain spots, and then there's just no cohesion at all, no, like, strategic, no, like, core competency that they drive forward with. And it's really just frustrating because they have talent there, but they don't know how to make it turn into anything at the moment.
I agree.
So my question for you, though, if you know, right now Houston's 1-4, do you think there's any chance Bill O'Brien gets fired of them this year?
I think you need to give Bill one more year, 3-year rule. I think you need to give him one more year. You know, otherwise we're just taking another step back. What I do think needs to happen is I think Cornell needs to go. The defense should not be playing this poorly. The defense looks just terrible. I mean, there is far too much talent, even with its flaws. There is far too much talent for the defense to look so flailingly awful. You're not using your cornerbacks right. They're not, you know, give McKinney more snaps. Crikey's sake, get Akeem Dent off my field. Get Justin Tuggle off my field. Cut Eddie Pleasant and then kick him off the team. make the changes that need to be made. You know, I don't know what Valentin's health is. I still think he's injured, but just get Pleasant off the field at any cost because he's killing
mm-hmm.
us. So these things need to happen, I think, first and foremost. Secondly, go back to your core competencies on offense, which is running a zone, offside zone scheme, played Arian Foster's strength. Don't make Arian Foster try to turn into a power back. Stupid. It's just stupid. Played his strengths, and then quarterback like it's actually an important position. This regime seems to be treating quarterback like the previous regimes treated safety. It's just, it's just there. We don't need to really give a shit about it.
Yeah, or nose tackle, or a second inside linebacker, or a second wide receiver. But, yeah. And I don't think Bill O'Brien will get fired this year. I think what's probably going to happen is he'll get 2 years if they draft a quarterback next year. And I'm scared that they aren't going to. Like, I really don't think they're going to draft a quarterback next year if they have a top three pick. And right now, Football Outsiders, Playoff Projections, they have a 45% chance for a top three pick, or 47.4% chance for a top three pick, and a 20.3% chance for the top pick in the draft. And I don't think they would take a quarterback. I think what they're going to do is take somebody, you know, on the defensive side of the ball probably, or something like that, take a safety or whatever. And then I think they're going to try to go get a veteran quarterback, like Drew Brees, for example, or one of these younger guys who Bill O'Brien thinks he can change. So he can get a veteran guy who's known, so he doesn't have to work with some type of, you know, rookie quarterback, and then it takes more time for them to win. Because his entire thing is he needs to win to keep his job, and I think that's what's going to occur. I just don't see him, you know, taking a quarterback next year. And maybe I'm just saying that because I'm scared to death to watch quarterbacks and fall in love again after, you know, Bridgewater broke my heart in 13. I don't know if I'm ready for it, but I really don't see them taking a quarterback next year if the odds work out the way they are right now.
No, and that's the scariest part of all, is if you're not going to be serious about taking quarterback in the 2014 draft, I'm sorry, when, you know, even if you stretch and take Blake Bortles, at some point you have to address the position meaningfully. And
mm-hmm.
They're just not doing it. They're not treating it as a position of need. You can't, I've wondered this several times, just kind of internal monologue, so I'll wonder about it, external monologue. But is Bill O'Brien so arrogant to think that he can try out any quarterback who has experience in the New England system and that they're going to be a quality NFL quarterback? Is he that arrogant? Because that's what I'm picking up, that I can just go sign mm-hmm. Matt Cassell in 2016 and he's going to run my offense just fine. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think that's what I was about to say to you as well. I think it's not even the New England thing. I think it's he thinks he's so good at coaching an offense and coaching a quarterback that he can turn anything into acceptable, you know, and then they can use their draft picks and their resources elsewhere. That he can turn anybody who is even below average into somebody who's above average. And the New England thing is, you know, I think it goes to the whole thing, like Bill O'Brien says he doesn't have a system. You know, they're going to be flexible. And all he's done is get quarterbacks who know the system because it's so complicated to learn. And that he wants guys who know his system. And it's just so stupid. You know, Brian Hoyer and Mount suck. It doesn't matter if you know a system or not, they suck. You give me a year. Give me 1 year, I'll practice playing quarterback, I'll learn the stupid system, and I'll be terrible because I'm not good. You know, it doesn't matter if they know it or not. You can always teach somebody. But, Do you have anything else to say about Bill O'Brien at all? Is that all you got?
I think I'm betting on him enough. It really, during Hard Knocks, and I saw it, and I kept thinking to myself, and, you know, I know it's easy, but everybody was on his jock all throughout the summer, right? Couldn't
mm-hmm.
say anything bad about Bill O'Brien without getting your head bitten off. So there was just such a level of uneasiness there with him. He's not Kubiak, and maybe that's not a good thing, because at least Kubiak had respect of his players, and I don't know if Bob has the respect of his. I really don't.
Mm-hmm. And Kubiak knows what he is, too. You know, is the other thing. And I kind of miss him sometimes when I see him in Denver. He's a fox in that orange shirt, that orange polo shirt. I miss him every time I see it. He looks meow. But speaking of old favorites, we're talking about Andre Johnson. And, you know, like, I'm a Texans fan, but I really love watching Andre Johnson have 6 catches on 7 targets for 77 yards and 2 touchdowns. Yeah, I was kind of hoping Luck was going to play, mainly because I wanted to see Andre, you know, be able to take some shots deep or whatever and do some more, you know, tonsil rubbing. But, you know, he did it, but he had a really nice game. And so, BFT, did you enjoy him watching – did you enjoy watching him massacre the Houston Texans on Thursday night?
The answer is no. And the biggest reason why is because it's like – I've used the term many times. It's the corpse of Andre Johnson that's out on the field right now. He's not the same player. He's got no giddy up, no quicks. He's not creating separation. The only reason he created separation is because he was playing the Houston Texans. When you watch him against other games, he is slow. He's just not the same guy anymore. And it's sad to me. It's like, you know, watching Willie Mays with the Mets or Harmon Killebrew with the Royals. You know, it's just not the same thing. So, you know, Andre, it's just, you're done, retire, go to the Hall of Fame, you know, you're done.
Yeah, and I mean, I was saying the same thing as well, but that was the part I did really enjoy both of his touchdowns. I enjoyed watching him play, and, you know, I think he doesn't have to get separation because he's gained 8-yard cushion on every play from Matt Hasselbeck at quarterback. Slow, old Andre Johnson is getting 8 yards pre-snap with Matt Hasselbeck at quarterback. And it's just the most insane defensive strategy of all time. But, yeah, that was the hardest part for me, though, wasn't seeing him in Indianapolis. It was seeing him just, you know, yeah, he's old and slow now. And, you know, it's sad to see, because, you know, I mean, I've grown up watching him play. And you know watching him play a lot better than I do because I was 13 when he came in the league. But, you know, he's my favorite player of all time, and he will always be, you know. I grew up watching him, and it was hard to see him, you know, that old and slow. But I did love some of his catches, and I'll give him my favorite one first, and then I'll ask you for yours. My favorite catch he had, though, was the 23-yard catch against Jonathan Joseph, where he runs a curl route. Joseph's giving an 8-yard cushion, but Joseph comes up to make the tackle. Andre runs right around the arm tackle and then proceeds to get 15 yards after the catch. For Andre Johnson to get 15 yards after the catch is just crazy. But against the Houston Texans defense, anything is possible. So, BFC, what was your favorite catch that he made?
That was mine, too, because to me that summed up the futility of the scheme. Look, that's not where Jonathan Joseph's going to excel. That really isn't. You're putting Joseph in a position where he's not going to succeed. So as a defensive coordinator, you have failed your own player in every respect. So that, to me, sums up perfectly what's wrong with the defense right now. The cushion, can't make the play, and then, you know, get another 15 yards. It was perfect. It was perfect 2015 Houston Texans defensive football.
Yeah. And I think you can run that cushion with Johnson, a guy who can actually break on the ball and has that speed. But Joseph doesn't have that anymore. Like, he doesn't break on the ball well at all. And you're just handing away 8 yards, 12 yards at a time. And it's silly. Is there anything at all? I guess on the defense, we can talk about J.J. Watt as well. Because it was kind of sad, you know, watching him on Thursday. He looked really tired. He was getting faced with double teams every time. I saw him actually dive into a double team before, just like fall into it because he was just getting beat up on every single play, trying to collapse it right there rather than taking it on head on. He was just getting, you know, roughed up. And so he had 2 tackles, 1 quarterback hit, and 1 roughing the passer penalty. So I'm going to ask you, what was your favorite Watt play of the game?
None. J.J. Clowney doing a beast job setting the edge. That was my favorite Watt play of the game, was watching J.W. and Clowney play.
Yeah, I don't have any either as well. You know, I went back and watched the whole Indy game on defense. And nothing, like, it was really sad. Like, I just felt really bad for him the entire time. Also on defense, Matt Hasselbeck is 40 years old. He spent the whole week peeing out of his butt, and he went 18 for 29 for 213 yards, 2 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, 0 sacks, and a QBR of 92.1. So, BFC, were you frustrated by how well he played? And Yeah, what was the key to his success on Thursday?
Well, he wasn't sacked. I mean, aside from a couple of hits, roughing the passer from J.J. Watt, the dude was clean. I mean, if we played on turf again, he wouldn't have much green on that uniform. What are we doing? What's our team doing? Oh, right. I got it. When you give 8 to 10 yard cushions to your defensive backs, to the wide receivers, that means the quarterback can get rid of the ball quickly on snaps and curls. And, hey, you're not going to generate a pass rush, which is supposed to be the core strength of your team. Oh, maybe that's what's going on. So that's what teams are doing to us. The Chiefs set the blueprint for it in game one, showed the rest of the league this is what the Texans are going to do, and we haven't adjusted to it. So, I don't know. There's such a high level of frustration with the defense. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say they adjusted to it by putting Eddie Pleasant at nickel linebacker so they have somebody there who can cover running backs and make tackles in space. That's how they adjusted to it. And I think, you know, it's kind of funny, too, like they're blitzing, you know. I know they were a top 10 in blitz rate last year, and they're trying to blitz again this year. But whenever you're blitzing with those cushions there that big, you're not going to get to the quarterback fast enough. And the other thing I saw Indy do, along with when it comes to their protection, is they would have 7 guys, you know, right there on the offensive line, using another tight end, using a running back. So they're having 7 guys block 4 guys. And they're getting double teams everywhere down the line. Clowney's getting doubled. Watt's getting doubled. Crick is getting doubled. And then John Simon's rushing from a 3 technique, 1 versus 1. And you're not getting any pressure at all like that. And then you add that with, you know, 7-yard cushions, you're going to have guys who are going to open on quick passes. And then, you know, it's just sad. Like, it's just so stupid. It's just really stupid. And so I was going to ask if you saw any reason why they had 0 sacks. And I guess I kind of answered my own question with the, you know, 7 people in protection every time. So the other thing I was asking, we talked about...
Because they're not going to... We can't cover the 3. We can't cover the 3 running routes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're just not doing it. Not with that big of a cushion. Not with Eddie Pleasant in the middle of the field. Not with our safety play. No, we're not going to be able to cover those cats.
And, you know, Jackson's had a bad year so far. And it's kind of easy to say. And I think, you know... I guess I'm just going to have this thought. Maybe we should put him at safety, put him at strong safety, put him at Eddie Pleasant's position because he's so good in the run game. And he's having trouble in coverage. What do you think about this idea, and why do you think Jackson's had such a bad year so far?
I think part of its scheme is he's a guy who has played much better in more of a press man type coverage. He doesn't have the long speed.
Mm-hmm.
He still has the great tackling ability, but he is not – the scheme that we're playing isn't really zone, but when you drop guys that deep, you are almost de facto putting them in a zone scheme, and that's not Cleo
mm-hmm.
Jackson's strength. So I would like to – I think that he is very much deserving of the Glover Quinn experiment at this point. Put him at safety. Put Kevin Johnson at one cornerback. Put Daryl Morris at the other cornerback. And let's play some press man coverage. Yeah, let's play some press man coverage, even though they're a little bit smaller guys. They're not big guys. They're going to struggle. But we don't have athleticism right now to deal with opposing wide receivers. And until we make personnel changes at those positions, I don't know what else you're going to do. Because the only thing I can think of is that we're so scared to put Jackson and Joseph on islands because
mm-hmm.
they don't have the athleticism anymore. So
yeah,
let's
I think
put
that
guys out
too.
There that do. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't miss it too, though. I think the cushions come from their freedom getting beat deep, and they're having to put their other safety. He's having to cover in the slot whenever they're in the 3-4 because they don't have any linebackers in cover. And then you have Raheem Moore, who's back there playing center field. And Moore is too slow at all to make any plays on the ball back there. He's pretty much just like whenever you play rugby, the 15th guy back there, he's called fullback. And he's back there just to make an open field tackle in case somebody breaks free to save a touchdown. And that's pretty much all he's doing back there. When it comes to Jackson, what I've seen is that he seems to be wasting steps whenever he breaks on the ball. He's either pausing or taking one step the other way before he makes his break. And just that little bit of a step is, you know, the difference between an incompletion and being open and giving up a reception. And the other thing he's getting too that's been kind of like an issue is he hasn't been very good when the ball's in the air. his back's been turned. He's been, you know, close enough to make a play to deflect it. But he's just not getting to the football. He's not looking for it. He's not turning around in time. And he's just kind of lost out there. And it doesn't look like it's an athleticism problem at all, you know. It just seems like these little things, and he just seems kind of lost. And he's not playing with any confidence right now. And so I'd like to see, yeah, Jackson play some safety is my the big thing I want to see this defense do in the future.
Yeah, it's he clearly has had a case of Frenchie Reeves neck syndrome this year, and he's been prone to it throughout his career. He's gotten over it a couple times, but yeah, he's just not he's not using his neck like he should. But yes, so if you talk about what does Kareem Jackson bring to you as a football player, if I think if you let Helm play center field, he has enough range to do that. I think you can bring him into the box because he is such a fantastic tackler. Asking to cover man-on-man or man coverage right now may not be the best use of his tools at this stage of his career. So let's at least – look, we're already starting dumpster fires at safety. Now's the time to experiment because he is starting to look more and more like Glover Quinn to me every day.
I really hope you Romero Cornell's listening to you, by the way. So my last question for you on defense, and we can talk about the offense for a little bit, is that, I cannot say his first name at all. Ben Jarek McKinney, he had 7 tackles, and I know we did see some den, some tackle, but it seems like he's kind of taken over the inside linebacker number 2 spot. Did you notice him at all last game?
Oh, thank Durga, I did. He's going to lack in. We know what he's going to lack in. He's not going to have great change of direction. We know that. He might get there, but the dude is huge. He's a huge inside linebacker. What is he, like 6'5", 250 or something like that?
Yeah.
He is going to be a true downhill thumper, at least in the beginning. I think he, if I remember correctly, correct me if I'm wrong, I think he had 7 tackles, which led the team this week.
He was both had 7.
Okay, yeah. So he was making plays, and it was really great to see because, once again, we know what we've got with Justin Tuttle. We know what we've got with Akeem Dent. You could drop either of those guys and go pick somebody up off the street and get roughly the same production. So it's time to give McKinney a chance, and I was really happy to see that he got so many snaps, that he was active out there. That is taking baby steps to improve your team. So, yeah, love seeing him.
Yeah, and, I mean, his size really stands out. You know, he's not that quick, but it doesn't matter. Quickness doesn't matter as much whenever you're able to recognize plays as fast as he does. And he has really good recognition. He can take on blocks head on. And the other thing I like, too, is that he sees the holes open up really well. And he's able to undercut, offensive linemen and able to maneuver in the traffic. You know, through all that mess, he's able to get around through it, get in the hole, make the tackle. And, it's been cool to see, like, an actual real inside linebacker who can tackle and play in the run game. And I know people like Mike Muhammad. I never thought he was any good at all. I thought he's about same thing as Jeff Tarpinian, but at least they can cover somewhat. But it's been fun to see McKinney, play a little bit, actually, instead of seeing Den and tackle every single play. On the defensive side of the ball, is there anything else you want to touch on?
Sorry, I was muted. I was slide for a moment. You touched on a little bit. I think it's time to recognize is kind of a harsh word because it's sadness. I have waited my entire – so most of you know, if anybody's actually listening tonight – I grew up with the Oilers as they switched from the 4-3 to the 3-4. That's why I love the defensive side of the ball so much. And one of my favorite all-time players is Curly Colt. And he was probably the first true zero-tech nose tackle in the league. They had to triple-team him. He's in the Hall of Fame, of course, now. He actually just lives about 5 miles from me, which is Stockholm or something. That's what I grew up with. I love that ball. I love the zero tech guy just with all my heart. And it was such a thrill to sign Vince Wilfork, say, oh my goodness, we finally have one. We finally have that guy. His play so far this year, though, and I think Rivers tweeted it best, was we signed Vince Wilfork to a $9 million contract to have a guest role on Hard Knocks. He has not looked good. He has not looked like a disruptor. He is not eating up the run. I think I'm going to go with the benefit of his doubt that I think the scheme is the problem and not he is the problem. But if one of those things is happening, and I don't think it's him, but he just does not look good this year. He does not look like he is he's not the same, even as he was last year when he was so disruptive. And it's sadness. It's great sadness.
Yeah, I don't think it's really the scheme at all with Wilfork, though, because he's playing a zero technique, you know? And I wanted to talk about Wilfork as well. We won't talk too much about the offense after this because, you know, it's been the same kind of thing. But because he's playing a zero technique, you know, his goal is to eat up double teams. And he's not. I've just watched the last – I watched Indy whole game, the first half of Atlanta, and all of Tampa Bay. And all three of these teams are just moving him on their double team. The first level, that first key to him is that he can't get moved on that first double team. He's there to be a stalemate. And he's there to hold on to both those offensive linemen as long as possible so then Cushing and McKinney can make plays and they can hit the hole without getting blocked. And that hasn't happened at all. He's getting pushed back. And then when he's not getting pushed back, he's penetrating way too far up the field. And he's too slow. Like, he's way too slow to make any tackle in the backfield. He's just there to take up space, and that's it. And you can't do it at all. And then, so you're having the biggest thing that Atlanta and Indy did against Houston in the run game was they got a hat on a hat every single running play. I mean, the linebackers are getting hit. Whether they make the tackle or not doesn't matter if you're getting up 5 yards in every run play. And so it all starts with Wilfork there in the center. He's not, you know, eating up these double teams. And right now Houston's ranked 20th for runs up the middle in adjusted line yards with 4.01. So it's not awful, but it's a far cry from the, you know, top 10 they were looking for whenever they signed him.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at who we're bringing to the table on the defensive line, who we should be bringing to the table, Clowney is a plus against the run. J.J. Watt is the best defensive end against the run. Vince Wilfork, Jared Crick has been solid against the run throughout his career.
Crick's been good.
Linebackers. Yeah, and linebacker, you got Brian Cushing. There is no excuse. There's no excuse to be as repeatedly gashed as we have been by those inside runs. And Devontae Freeman embarrassed our team, just embarrassed us when we played them.
And those are outside runs coming from the shotgun formation too as well. And again, you know, they're having to take that linebacker out because they can't cover them. And in rushing defense, they're negative 5.6%, which is 20th in the NFL. And they were 16th last year. So we'll go ahead and talk about the offense now. And I guess I want to talk about DeAndre Hopkins because right now he's leading the NFL with 74 targets, I should say. He's been targeted 74 times. I think Julio Jones was second with like 60 right now. And on Thursday, he had 11 catches on 14 targets for 169 yards. And Arian Foster, 9 catches on 10 targets. Now, do you think this is mostly DeAndre Hopkins is always open, DeAndre Hopkins is really good, or do you think this is, I have nobody else to throw the ball to, so I'm going to throw the ball to the sideline to Hopkins, and then he's going to open and dump it off to Foster?
I think that the positive you take from that is that at least they're targeting the best guy on the team.
Mm-hmm.
The negative from that is that's what you fucking get for signing Cecil Short and Nate Washington. Oh, my God. Dudes. That's what you get for having Garrett Graham tight end. You know, there's a price to pay for making extremely poor personnel decisions about where you're sticking players at. That's why DeAndre Hopkins is being targeted has been targeted 74 times, 15 times a game he's being targeted.
It's crazy.
It's a good thing and a bad thing because you know what? Teams are going to start rolling their coverage over. Look, Cecil Shorts has nothing. Nate Washington brings nothing to the table. You could put a speed bump on Garrett Graham and not have to worry about it. So, or worry about him. It's just, this is ridiculous. So, at some point, teams are going to adjust a little bit more to shut down Hopkins. And Hopkins is, I don't know, how do you compare Hopkins? He reminds me of kind of a Larry Fitzgerald in his prime kind of player, maybe with a little bit less long speed, but that's what we're talking about. We're talking about a guy. Yeah, we're talking about a guy who catches just about everything, incredible
mm-hmm.
hand, but with the shit team around him.
Yeah, and I mean, my biggest issue with this, you're taking you're only targeting like 10% of the field in your passing plays. And defenses are going to change it some. They should just double him every time. And so you're only throwing routes to the sideline or you're dumping to the center of the field in the flat to Foster. So there's 90% of the field that's not being utilized at all. And, you know, they're going to start creeping up. That's not going to be open after a while. And, you know, I think it's only going to get worse, too. I think we're going to start seeing a lot more interceptions get thrown from these quarterbacks than we have. And not these, like, run out, throws the ball hard in double coverage, it goes off the defender's hands and goes up in the air, sort of interceptions. I'm talking about, you know, pick sixes and that sort of thing. I think that's going to be, you know, the next thing that's going to happen to this offense. But speaking of number two wide receivers, Jalen Strong made an appearance, actually, and he caught that Hail Mary. Were you excited to actually know that he was alive and they existed and that there's somebody they traded up for, you know, actually plays in the league?
Yeah, and again, let's go back to Benardrick McKinney. There, you have to start taking steps. When your team is 1-4, when your team is 1-3, you're not doing it right. So you have to start playing guys that are going to give you at least some sort of physical upside. And to wait until we had to get Cecil Short and Nate Washington injured to give Jalen Strong snaps is a joke. It's a flat-out joke, this poor talent evaluation. Look, he might be running the wrong routes every once in a while. That's going to happen. He's a rookie. But at least you're going to give yourself the ability to make plays down the field. Jalen Strong tracked the hell out of that Hail Mary. I mean, mm-hmm. That was not a fluke play. Jalen Strong knew what he was doing going up and getting that ball. So, which sounds crazy on a Hail Mary. He that was his. Nobody else was going to touch that. You know, he's going to bring you that jump ball ability. You don't have to throw a Hail Mary to him. He's going to bring you that ability. He's going to go up in the air and fight for the ball. He's going to give you a little bit of explosiveness from the wide receiver position. He's at least going to make plays, something Nate Washington and Cecil Shorts aren't going to do. So, was mm-hmm. I excited? Yes. Do I care that he called a Hail Mary and a completely blown coverage touchdown? No, because you know what? He's not Nate Washington and Cecil Shorts.
Yeah, I think what I saw in that was that just how much bigger he was than the secondary. I know I tweeted something out, like a screenshot, too. And he's looks a foot taller.
It was like a full helmet. It was like a helmet taller than the rest of them on the Colts defensive backs. It was great.
Yeah. He was kind of like the 14-year-old who hits puberty before everybody else. He was trying to pick up basketball and just stands there with his arms above his head and rebounds fall to him, and he hits that square. And, like his size, that's a real advantage. That's something you can do, you know, anything with. And so I think I do like Cecil Shorts. I think he's a good in the slot. He can get open, and he doesn't drop passes. And so I'm hoping that whenever, you know, Shorts, the 14, comes back, they have him play only in the slot, and then this wide receiver number two crap, and they go Strong and Hopkins on the outside and Shorts at the third wide receiver spot. And then just something different, you know. The last question I have about the offense for you is, you know, Foster, again, he looks rusty in 19 carries for 41 yards. And when do you think he's going to be back to his old self?
As long as Brian Hoyer is playing quarterback, he's not.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty clear to me that teams are stacking the box. They want Brian Hoyer to throw the ball. I mean, I think if they could get, like, 14 guys in the box and, like, one defensive back, I think teams would do that. They just want to stop and run. They know that's our entire strategy. Because when you don't have weapons, that's what's going to happen. You don't have to have two guys covering Shorts in Washington. You don't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So their teams are going to continue to stack the box on us. They're going to continue to dare us to throw. And because of our poor quarterback play, I mean, you know, crikey. Ryan Mallett throwing ground balls and Brian Hoyer throwing floaters. I mean, that's what we're going to get from our quarterback play. So, yeah, why wouldn't teams stack the box? They're going to stop Arian Foster. It's not a matter of Arian Foster. Yes, he's not the same. He's older. He's getting close to the wrong side of 30. But he still knows how to make a cut better than anybody. He still knows how to read the zone better than anybody I think I've ever seen. But mm-hmm. When you're trying to run against nine guys, you're not going to succeed. You're just not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm looking at this more like a physical standpoint, and he's just not there physically, you know, regardless of how teams are stacking the box against him. And so my guess is I think by week 8 against Tennessee, I think we should see that burst again. Because he's making that cut, you know, like he has some open field in front of him, but he just can't accelerate it all right now. And so I'm hoping by week 8, I think at the latest you'll hopefully see after the bye, So they play Tennessee week 8, then the Bengals week 9 on, I think, Monday Night Football, which is going to be a real hoot. And then week 10, they have the bye week. And so I'm hoping by then we at least see something from him, you know, as far as athletically. Because I think he's still on a contract for 2 more years, and he's getting paid, you know, $10 million, $11 million. So that's what I'm hoping to see. Is there anything else you want to talk about at all from Thursday night's game, or your general thoughts at all before we start talking about Jacksonville?
No, I got one more thing I would like to say is that I am 45 years old. I very literally grew up watching the Oilers. The Oilers were church for my family on Sunday. In all the years I have stalked this horrible place called Earth, Brian Hoyer's pass in the fourth quarter has got to be the worst single football play I have seen in my life. And that is really saying something. That's living through a lot of really bad Texans and Oilers teams over the year. But to have your quarterback just launch the ball literally blindly, he had no idea where that ball was going. To launch the ball blindly at the end of a game was absolutely amazeballs. That was just it was Brian Hoyering.
Yeah, the thing about it is also third down too, you know. It's like when I talked about Mallett. Your Mallett says taking, I think, one sack, but he doesn't understand when taking a sack is a good idea. And that was a perfect example of it. It's third and ten. Not even necessarily taking a sack, but just throwing the ball at somebody's feet. Because they ran three drag routes in the center of the field, and nobody was open there. But, yeah, because they're running into each other on these routes, and it's really stupid.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's pretty funny, though. So I guess my first question to you in Jacksonville is that Bortles is 108 for 189 for 1299 yards, 10 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. These are just passing numbers, too. I didn't look at the running numbers because I forgot to until this moment. So, BFD, what are your thoughts on the Bortles era, and are you happy that Houston was clowning over him in 2013?
That's a trick question, because if you're going to ask me would I rather have Bortles or would I rather have Brian Hoyer, I'm going to have to say Bortles.
Well, yeah.
So, yeah, it's a hard question. He's clearly a better quarterback than he was. He's clearly going to have accuracy problems. I don't know how long they're going to last, but he's got issues with his accuracy. He also can make plays with his feet. He has a big enough arm where he can throw the ball and push the ball downfield. So he's got a lot of positives going for him. The inaccuracy is always going to hurt him. Would I rather have Bortles than Clowney? I don't know. I really don't. Because you can get guys to set the edge against the run. You can't get NFL quarterbacks. And Bortles right now moving closer and closer to being an acceptable level NFL quarterback. And damn, that makes me jealous. So he's not great. He's still Bortles. But, you know, at least there's hope there. Because look how the Jacksonville team is starting to gel. And Bortles is part of that gelling process. He really, really is.
You know, we've had some doom and gloom out here, as Chris likes to say. And that big sellout who's too cool and too busy to come on the show with us anymore. And we've said some sad things, but I think you saying that Blake Bortles makes you jealous might be the saddest thing I've heard on here, that even an acceptable quarterback. I'm sure you watch Ryan Fitzpatrick playing for the Jets, and you'd probably get jealous of that. Am I correct?
Oh, yeah, totally. Well, I do get jealous up until the time he, you know, throws another pass. Then I lose it. Yeah.
My thing with Bortles is that he has all the physical traits. You know, he's strong, he's tall, he can throw the ball far downfield. He's, you know, really really great athlete. You know, he's fast, he's strong in the pocket. But the two things that are going to come down to him is that, one, he's a really bad decision maker. Like, he still doesn't know how to read zone coverage. He still doesn't know where to go with the ball at times. He holds on to it for too long in the pocket. And he leaves guys wide open, you know, down the field. And the second thing, too, is accuracy. Now, I can see the decision-making thing getting, you know, better as long as he doesn't have an IQ of, like, 45. But the accuracy thing, you know, like we see with Mallett right now, that thing doesn't really change at all. Like, accuracy issues tend to stay with the player for their entire career, and it usually leads to their downfall, unless they're so good at everything else. And I don't think Bortles is that. So, yeah, I'd rather have Clowney than him right now. And I'd rather have Clowney, you know, upside and potential in his career than Blake Bortles. But I do think Bortles is getting there, but I just don't think he'll ever be good enough at making decisions. And I don't think his accuracy will ever be, you know, good enough for him to be, like, a quote-unquote, like a above-average NFL quarterback.
Yeah, and you're probably right. You know, he is – we sat down looking stats. He's 87.2 QB rating. You know, when you think about Ryan Mallett, 63.6, and up until the Atlanta game, Hoyer was right there too. That, you know, these are incorrect. Okay, so to be intellectually honest, Brian Hoyer has a 96.8 QB rating, but let's please just all once again remember that a lot of those passes have been thrown in trash time against second, third stringers. So, you know, Bortles at 87.2 isn't too bad. You're still, when you're talking about he's the 20th best quarterback in league, there are worse things to be than that. And we've got them both on our team. So, yeah, but you're right. The other things are going to hang around. They're going to be a problem. But he's showing improvement, and that's really all you can ask for from a guy who's 24 years old.
Well, enough about Bortles. What are the matchups or players you're looking forward to on Sunday?
You know, I keep talking about how much I want to see J.J. Watt versus this guy or Jadeveon Clowney against this guy. Really,
yeah, it hasn't
this
yet.
Game, it hasn't happened yet. So this game is really going to come down to how is Brian Hoyer going to cut another year off the back end of my life with his horrible decision-making? And that's really the matchup. That's the matchup right there. It's Brian Hoyer versus my heart. What is he going to do that's going to be so freaking stupid? Because he's going to do it. It's going to be getting the snap and throwing the interception on the first play of the season. Is it going to be launching the ball into a defensive back's arms? What is he going to do that's going to be just so incredibly stupid? And we made fun of Schaub for years about that. Every game he had to have one really stupid pass. Well, Brian Hoyer just doesn't have one stupid pass. He has one transcendentally awful pass, way beyond whatever Schaub could handle. So that's my question. What is Brian Hoyer versus my heart? That's the matchup.
I guess for me, I watched two Jacksonville games as far as like the top 22 goes. And T.J. Yeldon's a real football player. He's a lot of fun to watch. You know, and so Houston's have problems tackling, so I'm excited to watch T.J. Yeldon play. And then the other thing is the Seahawks have Chris Clemons out there rushing the pass from the edge. And I got to watch Dwight Freeney a lot, you know, growing up, and I've seen some good swim moves. And Chris Clemons is one of the best swim moves, spin moves I've ever seen. His spin move is disgusting. And so I'm excited to see him use that thing against Derek Newton or Dwayne Brown. And it's also cool about his spin move is because he kind of uses it like a fatality, like a finishing move, where he's only going to use it maybe like 5 times a game. And so he always has it there in his back pocket for whenever he really needs to get to the quarterback in certain situations. And so I'm excited to see, you know, Chris Clemons go up against Newton Brown on the outside and get a chance to use that spin move. And I think he also talked about, too, like, Clowney and Watt against this crappy offensive line. But Clowney and Watt against this crappy offensive line. And I'm never going to have that answer again for the rest of the year because until it happens, I don't see it occurring. You know, I've been waiting for this defense to have that game, to make a stand, to show why they have the talent to be a top 10 defense. And I'm never, you know, thinking that's going to occur this season. You know, I just think they're poorly coached. I think there's too many holes for that to happen. And so I'm not going to, you know, put any more of my, I guess, love or affection or hopes into the idea that this defense is going to have like a big coming out show here at all this year.
No, and it's really weird to say that Jacksonville has legitimate weapons now. They have Robinson Hearns. They have Julius Thomas is back. Boy, is that a crappy matchup for us.
Yeah.
So we have legitimate issues now with the Jacksonville Jaguars, guys.
And Hearns was a UDFA as well.
Yep.
And I guess, you know, it'd be kind of weird that happened where, like, 2013, Houston loses twice to Jacksonville. And you know, that may happen. But and I guess to the logic head question, and he was wondering to the, I guess I'm summarizing here, but he was wondering what's going to happen if, you know, Houston loses to Jacksonville, because the idea, not only for the fan base, but I guess the Texans, is that at least we're not, you know, we're not one of those franchises at the bottom of the league. We're not Cleveland. We're not Tennessee. We're not Jacksonville. You know, we're at least better than that. We may not be Green Bay, but we're not Jacksonville. So what do you think happens if they lose on Sunday to them?
I think it's going to be very much a legitimate in the AFC South, as sad as that makes me to say, because the Jaguars are an ascendant team, and we are not right now. We are not putting out – we do not have the type of talent Jacksonville has on their roster, and that's even, you know, comparing the two defenses where we just run circles around them. So it's the coaching, the scheme, whatever you want to put it on. If we lose to Jacksonville, that is going to give that team a ton of confidence. And I don't like the outcome of that, because we just, when you're playing as poor ball as we are, it becomes a dead spiral.
Mm-hmm. When do you think Ryan Mallett plays in this game, or does he play at all?
No, I think that because it's Jacksonville, because they don't quite trot out a very good defense, right? I don't know if we see the Ryan Mallett experience in this game. I could be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But it's not – I don't see that happening. I mean, maybe, you know, Brian Hoyer gets a hangnail and Ryan Mallett goes in and throws a 15-yard pass. And that's it. Ryan Hoyer sits from now on. Maybe that happens. Who knows? I don't see any other strategy from Bob at this point. But, you know, I think Brian Hoyer plays the entire game, and there's going to be a lot of crying.
I think Ryan Mallett comes in the third quarter, and I think it's going to be just the funniest thing to ever happen. I think I would probably be like Batman when the Joker throws some laughing gas at people and they're just in the same asylum laughing forever. I think that's what may happen to Rusty Ryan Mallett in this third quarter. But so I guess, is there anything else you want to talk on, or are you ready to give your prediction for Sunday?
Sure, I'm ready to give my prediction for Sunday. I mean, look, I got one wrong. I got one wrong last week. The Texans couldn't beat a 40-year-old guy playing with hooked up to an IV on the field and the little thing on three wheels, and we couldn't beat them.
Yeah, I'm really upset about it, because I saw that Hasselbeck was playing and I changed my pick, but I thought I was just saying, you know, F it. You know, I'm going deep. I'm sticking to my guns. I'm going with the Colts. And I didn't listen to my inner case kingdom, and I picked, you know, I picked the Texans, you did too, and our perfect record's blemished, and now we're both 4-1. And also, the Texans cut Chandler Worthy today, so we both missed our next player to be cut for that prediction. But, yeah, so we're each 4-1 now, and I know I stole your thunder some by talking, but let's hear your prediction for Sunday's game.
Oh, boy. We get the pleasure this week of watching the two worst teams in the league battle it out in the white trash capital of the world, Jacksonville, Florida. You will see as you're watching the game that the Jacksonville fans are very excited to play dress up for Halloween by dressing like empty seats. It has got to be the worst venue in all of football. I have absolutely no respect for the city of Jacksonville, the team, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Did I mention the people of Jacksonville?
And the uniforms.
Yeah. So, we are playing in their house, and their weakness is their defense. Sadly, they've only given up 10 more points than we have. Our weakness is our offense, and they've scored less than our offense. So you have a real contradiction in teams here. I do think this game will be just as ugly as it looks on paper. I do think they'll be scoring because neither defense can stop the other team's offense. But at least one offense has tools and the other one doesn't. And so I'm going to have to go with Jacksonville 31. Yeah, putting a 31 on us. And your Houston Texans, 23 with a missed field goal. Missed extra point, I'm sorry. 34-23. Glitter kitty.
You know, that's a good one. And I'm going Jacksonville as well. And I have no analysis all behind this because I don't do enough research before the picks on Tuesday. This is all gut feeling. Now I'm going Jacksonville 24, Houston 13. And it is going to be such a miserable experience. There's this band called the Gin Blossoms, and they're from, 90s alternative band. I grew up listening to music. And they have an album called New Miserable Experiences, and I think that's what this Sunday is going to be. And this entire season is just another new miserable experience for Texans fans. And I think, Houston loses 24-13 to the Jacksonville Jaguars.
And let me add to mine that my guess is predicated on Blake Bortles playing, starting at quarterback. He is hurt. Chad Henne is the backup there. Chad Henne is not a bad backup. But I don't think I'm not sure if he wins against the Texans. I'd have to think about that a little bit more. But my prediction is predicated upon Blake Bortles starting that game.
Yeah, minus two. And if we change it, it'll be switched in our game predictions that come out on Friday. But, same here too with Bortles. What a fun time. And also, if this whole Houston losing thing keeps going, and I think they play each other again like week 12, we'll have to get together and watch Houston play Jacksonville whenever that occurs. Because I know in 2013 we watched Houston play Jacksonville like week 16 on Thursday Night Football, and we had Bridgewater Louisville up the other TV, and I thought it was a beautiful thing was occurring, but it didn't. But
right.
We'll have to try to get together for that one. That was a fun night. So I guess, that's kind of it. But tomorrow, the biggest thing is, I know it's going a little bit longer than usual, but the Rangers and Astros are both playing game 5. And maybe his will be done. We'll get an all-Texas ALCS, or maybe not, and both teams lose. But are you going to watch baseball tomorrow, and you think both Texas and Houston wins tomorrow?
That collapse by the Astros on Tuesday Monday was epic. And it was almost 93 Oilers-esque. That's how bad it was. I don't know if you come back from that. I'm going to root for the Astros and hope that the best happens. As far as the Rangers and Blue Jays, meh, whatevs.
I probably won't watch Houston all because I have to go, go somewhere and watch every baseball game. I'll listen to it tomorrow, though. But I'm really hoping Cole Hamels turns into 2010 Cliff Lee and shuts down the Blue Jays. Both those series in 2015-2010, Texas wins the first two games on the road, loses the next two at home, and then 2010 they beat Dave Price and the Rays game 5 on the road. And Lee pitched a perfect, not perfect game, a complete game. They won 4-1. And I think Hamels does the same thing tomorrow. And I'm going to shoot lasers out of my nipples and be so excited. But, that's all I got. It was a fun show. And I'm excited to watch some baseball tomorrow and all that. And we'll see what happens on Sunday.
Wrap us up.
So, BFD, thanks for coming on again. We're on every Tuesday night live at 7 o'clock. And if you don't listen to us live, I'm pretty sure we're on Stitcher. I know we're on iTunes. We're also on the Blog Talk Radio page. And if you have any problems at all finding us, send me an email or a tweet or BFD or send something to Thread and we'll show you where to go. If you like the show, tell all your friends, all your family members who you hate, as long as they have some semblance of interest in Houston, Texas, you should tell them because they're the best Texas podcast, maybe the only Texas podcast around. And if you ask any questions tonight, thank you as well. Like I said, we'll be back next week at 7. Thanks again for coming on BFD. My name is Matt Weston, and also thank you, listener, for listening to Battle Red Radio.
Yay!
It works.
Los astros rodeando, y en los astros pensando en ganar, y en los astros no